What up? About Last Night podcast listeners, your boy Adam Ray here. Got a quick question for you. You guys like making great money, right? Like super dope money? Oh, that's what I thought. Well, here's a really cool opportunity I just had to share with you. Driving with Uber. That's right, Uber. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's that popular smartphone app that connects riders with drivers. Yeah, man, everybody uses it. I take Uber pretty much every day. I take it when I'm trying to get to a comedy club. I take it when I'm trying to avoid drinking and driving. I take it when I just want to meet cool people. I'm telling you, the stories and the conversations I've had while in an Uber are incredible. One of my best buds met his current girlfriend through Uber because Uber drivers are the shit, man. They're cool, they're fun, they are good at conversation, and they get you where you need to go on time and in the appropriate amount of fun. You know why people love driving with Uber? I'll tell you what. The people who drive with Uber, they love it because they're their own boss, all right? They earn great money, and it's easy to start. All you need is a car and a license. That's all you need. Driving with Uber is great for anyone who needs flexibility. Parents, all right, if you're trying to find a way to easily work around your family schedule, perfect, drive with Uber. Students, you looking to make some extra cash in between those classes? Perfect, drive with Uber. Now's the prime time to cash in driving with Uber, all right? You guys are going to thank me for telling you how to get paid weekly. I could be getting into your car when you drive with Uber, and we could talk about all sorts of fun. We could talk about DuckTales. We could talk about Pop-Tarts and Fraggle Rock and how the Muppets are coming back. We could talk about weed, man. I'm telling you, if you've got a car and a license, put them both to work for you today and start earning serious life-changing cash. Sign up to Drive with Uber at drivewithuber.com. Visit drivewithuber.com. That's drivewithuber.com. Hey, guess what? Don't be a goober. Drivewithuber.com. Well, it's that special time of year again. You know what I'm talking about. When you hang out with your buds, you drink some beer, you eat some chips, you ignore your girlfriend. Football season's only just begun, but guess what? It already feels like the playoffs at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where millionaires are being crowned all season long. One-week fantasy at DraftKings means no season-long commitments. It's fantasy football on demand. You play where you want, when you want, with the players you want. You could play on a boat in the middle of Nova Scotia. You could play in your stepmom's dildo drawer. You could play under the sewer like the fucking Ninja Turtles, man. It's your world. It's your game. And with $1 million up for grabs every week, $1 million every week, every game is the big game and every play matters. So first and 10 in the first quarter feels like fourth and goal with 1 second left. And a long touchdown run could mean more than just a victory for your favorite team. It could mean you've just turned your love of football into a $1 million payday. This isn't fantasy as usual, baby. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and use promo code ALN to play for free for a shot at $1 million in this week's Millionaire Maker event. Enter ALN for free entry now only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Go Hawks, fuck the Broncos. Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the show and subscribing on iTunes and listening to us on your Android, your iPhone, Stitcher, wherever you get the show. Thanks so much for the support. Keep giving us that 5-star rating and iTunes comment on the iTunes page. Helps us climb the charts and continue our world dominance. Jesus, sounded like Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget there. Although, you know what? If I could be Dr. Claw for Halloween, I could probably have Brad as my little, as the cat that I carry and pet. I'll get you, get it, next time. All right, well, I just decided what I'm going as for Halloween, so get ready for those pictures. Today's episode, one of my favorites, is a good buddy of mine, hilarious comic, born and raised in Los Angeles, been doing stand-up 12-plus years. He's one of the best in the game. He's got a new album out called Stop Not Owning This on iTunes. And he's just a great dude, and he's got amazing stories that we're going to get into very shortly. And his name is Nick Youssef. Nick Youssef, baby. Look him up on Twitter, at Nick Youssef, Youssef. Man, growing up in L.A., he told one of the greatest arcade stories you might ever hear. He got kicked out of high school because the kid just did not respect authority. One of the sweetest guys you'll ever meet, and it was crazy to hear how different it used to be. And then, of course, his new album, his podcast called Occasionally Awesome, which you can get on the All Things Comedy Network that he does with our buddy Kevin Christie. Check that out. Just enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed having Nick here, baby. It's a good one. Follow Nick on Twitter at Nick Youssef. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Mr. Brad Williams will be this weekend in Tampa, Florida at the Improv in Tampa, Florida, September 18th through the 20th. Get your tickets at improv.com. Then go see Brad in Bloomington, Minnesota at the House of Comedy in Bloomington, Minnesota, September 30th through October 4th at the House of Comedy, Brad Williams, Bloomington, Minnesota. Come see me, Fort Worth, Texas, baby, September 17th through the 19th. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I'll be headlining Hyenas in Fort Worth, Texas. Come out and see me. It's my first time at this club. All you ALN listeners, bring your shirts, bring your merch. I'll sign it, take pictures. We'll have a great time. Texas is a great comedy city. I've heard nothing but great things about this club from Brad. Really pumped to do it. Come out and see me. Hit me up for tickets, too, on Twitter if you want tickets. I've got a guest list for every night. Hit me up on Twitter, at Adam Ray Comedy, for tickets to my shows at Hyenas in Fort Worth, Texas. And then you can come see me, of course, with Brad Williams in Tempe, Arizona, at the Improv, October 28th. Through November 1st. Very excited to announce this piece of information. The first Hollywood live About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray has a date. The Hollywood Improv, October 20th, 8 p.m. Holy shit, so pumped. First of many live shows we're going to do at the Hollywood Improv, a live About Last Night podcast recording. If you live anywhere in the Hollywood area or surrounding Los Angeles area, come out and see Brad and I. The guest list for this show, the lineup of comics is going to blow your fucking mind. So get tickets. I think starting next week, you can get tickets at improv.com for October 20th, 8 p.m. About Last Night podcast recording. Brad Williams, Adam Ray, and special guest to be announced. So get your tickets for that. And of course, while you're getting your tickets for the About Last Night live show, go to estoymerchandise.com, estoymerchandise.com, and get your ALN merch, your shirts, your mugs. Bring them to the shows. The support has been so great from you guys. We really appreciate it. Keep tweeting at us. Keep emailing us. You guys have been so great. Congrats again to all the Clooney Boop winners. You guys will be receiving your merch within the next few weeks. Brad and I have both been in and out of town, and it's been tough to coordinate getting everything together, but you will have it within the next few weeks, so get ready for that. Now that we got all the tour dates out of the way, those are the Twitter handles, that's the merch info, that's the Clooney Boop info, and now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with our buddy, Nick Youssef.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's About Last Night.
Yeah, I had. So you're happy living alone?
I am. You know, Dave and I got along, well. But I've never. It's just, I don't know. It's great.
Yeah.
I think for the same reason, probably he moved out. He probably was like, man, I think I'm tired of being with some. You know, and it was like, we didn't hang out a lot together, but it was. It's just so nice to come home. Here's how I know I'm not a total adult yet. I'm like, this is so responsible. I'm 33. Yeah. I got my own place now. And then I'm sitting around and I go, and I can jerk off anywhere.
Oh, yeah. It's like when you're on the road and you're like, I'm going to jerk off on that lamp now because I can do
just
it.
Just because I can.
Yeah.
You see that seat you're sitting in right now,
oh,
Nick?
Oh, Brad, yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. That's not true.
You're right. That wasn't Adam. That was me. But right.
That's why the chair doesn't move. It's literally stuck
so
to the ground.
Funny.
Exactly. Because I figure, you know, Adam his roommate's gone. I can come in and kind of do what I
and
want.
Just jerk off all over the place.
Yeah. Just jerk off everywhere.
That is a huge like feeling of like liberation where you're like, I can walk around naked. I can jerk off anywhere I want.
Why is that? Why are those our first thoughts?
Because we're animals.
Right.
Because we're actual animals want like, you know, we want to mark our territory and we want our own domain.
Yeah.
And then once you're in your 30s, you're like, dude, I how much longer can I do this? How much longer can I have a roommate?
You can't be a 45-year-old guy with a roommate. Oh,
no. And I know a few where they're like, yeah, man, you know, I'm 42, and like my roommate and I, I'm like, what was that last word?
Yeah.
Like, you have a roommate.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I get the struggle living out here and, you know.
Totally.
The career thing, and it's like things don't always go the way you want, but you're like, there's got to be ways around it.
There's got to be a point. If you hit 40, and I'm thankful that I have avoided getting there and having that conundrum, but to where you go, okay, like, do I slum it in like a small place by myself just to be by myself at 40, or do I have a little more space but still have to tell girls like, hey, do you mind keeping it down? Like,
right.
Gary's, Gary's, you know, working on some new beats and.
Yeah, like living, kind of like moving out of Hollywood maybe to get a bigger place that you can have to yourself instead of like, I got to stay in Hollywood so I can be where all like the, you know, scenester stuff is. And you're like, at 40-something, are you still like going to bars every night and doing all that?
Are you still going to the scene places?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Or are you the old guy at that place where it's like, how old are you?
No, man, bummer. It's Friday night. We're going to One Oak.
Yeah, I know.
Thank God we're all not yet at that age to where we can be, right? I feel like...
Yeah.
I mean, I think 40 is when where people start looking at you and go, really, man, you're still getting super fucked up.
Right.
And you have a roommate.
And there's like a list of things where you're like, by 40 or even by 30, you're like, by 30, I want to have, you know, like my shit together. I want to be responsible. Yeah. I want to have like, you know, money where I can like
steady income,
get that like steak every 3-4 months if I want.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. Things like that.
And not just Sizzler steak.
Yeah.
And not just Applebee's steak. I mean, don't get me wrong. If they want to come on and sponsor this podcast.
Yeah. Let's not talk ourselves out of any.
I'm all for riblets.
Applebee's.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Is that an actual item option?
You don't know about Applebee's riblets?
Jesus. Nobody's ever said that ever.
I think that pains me that no one has
riblets
said.
Sounds like a made up like steak term, like how like Taco Bell created chalupa.
Yeah.
And things like that where you're like, is that a traditional Mexican dish? And then it's not.
Riblets sound like what I would serve at a dwarf traditional feast. It's just like, oh no, it's the festival of little people where we all gather around and eat riblets around a bonsai tree. You don't
regular
know?
Regular ribs are too big. That's why we have riblets.
Or if you're fighting like some sort of like, if the Smurfs needed to like defeat some sort of like gargoyle, they threw riblets at them.
Right.
Oh, Papa Smurf, we're out of riblets. And then, like, I don't know.
Well, I guess you Smurfs will die.
I guess you Smurfs will die. And then and Smurfette comes in and says, I've got plenty of battery-powered riblets in my closet. And then she saves the day. I don't know why I went there. Yeah. That was kind of like a weird vibrator double entendre. Yeah. But
were you a big cartoon guy?
Yeah, I was a huge Simpsons guy.
Yeah.
I was a bit like everybody.
Yeah, sure. I know some people that weren't.
I was just going to say, have you ever met anyone that's like, I never watched The Simpsons. I'm like, are you an alien?
I get people that are like, I never got into Seinfeld. Well, not even that. I'm just like, I get people that just say I don't like it or it's not my whatever. But like Simpsons, I feel it's just like, how do you not? Even my parents watch The Simpsons.
Yeah.
That's the brilliance of it is that it's made for kids and adults.
Yeah.
There's like jokes that went by you when you're 13 and then you rewatch it when you're 17. Oh, I didn't notice that. And then when you're 23, you're like, this is like an adult themed show made for kids.
Right. Yeah. And there's just certain things that happen in pop culture where even if you don't watch it regularly, you have to be familiar with it just so you can get along in standard conversation.
Sure.
So when guys are hanging out and they see a concert and some guy goes, worst concert ever.
Yeah.
Like you don't want to be like, yeah, worst concert. Really? Thought it was the worst concert? Like, and then you're not laughing
about
it. Or
it's like, why are you
it?
Saying it in that voice? You're like, dude, it's from The Simpsons. And they're like, yeah, I never really watched that. It's like, well, then we can't be friends.
Oh, God.
We just solved that problem.
And then what do they usually watch instead? Like, what's that person's show? You know, if they say they don't watch The Simpsons. I was more of a...
Sometimes they go like, I was like a King of the Hill fan, and it's like, well, me too. But like, you can do. How did you not have
both, man?
Yeah, you're not just limited. It's like when you go to the frozen yogurt shop, and you're like, no, I'm just gonna get vanilla, or you can hit that little button in the middle, and you get vanilla and chocolate. You piece of shit.
Yeah, two like, great tastes. It tastes great together.
Exactly. Come strong to the hoop when you have options.
Yeah, there's so many like references. Yeah, that come up, and you go. Some scenario will happen and you'll go, yeah, like that one Simpsons episode, and then you have like a moment with your friends.
Totally. That's also, those moments are key to have in life. Like, you need to be, I think as comics, obviously, like, we have to pay attention to a lot of shit, right?
Yeah.
sometimes I feel like I pay attention to stuff just because I'm like, I need to be in the know about stuff. Like, I don't look at, certain reality shows. I'm starting to like be like, man, maybe I should like, I feel like I hear more and more people talking about it and I don't watch a lot. But I'm like, I should at least know what that show is in case it comes up in something or I want to comment on it during a show. I feel
like I'm hearing a lot of comics talk about, like, Say Yes to the Dress. And I'm like, I don't know what the hell that is.
Yeah.
I've got to watch that now just so I know the reference points.
I'm the same way. Like, every once in a while, I'll just go online and get, like, a general overview of the shows that your average person is into. So I'll go to, like, the TLC website and then just look at the summaries of the shows. I'll go, all right, now I know what John and Kate Plus Eight is.
Sure.
But I won't watch it, but I'll know if someone brings it up. I'll go, I know what you're saying,
right?
But I'll never watch it.
Right. Because it's funny sometimes to play dumb and like not know that. Like I've had moments in crowd work where people will say something and I don't know and I'm able to, but like you can't do that all the time because then you just seem like a, I don't know, out of touch.
And it just like you trip up on your words if someone yells something out and you go, wait, what is that? Am I supposed to know that? Instead of just having some general line about it.
Yeah.
And then you seem like, this guy knows everything.
What would you say that you became most fascinated about? Like once you started to find your voice as a stand-up that you found having an opinion about that you maybe thought you didn't before?
In the earlier days, it was a lot of like pop culture stuff.
Yeah.
So, because I was kind of interested in it. It was just like fun to like, you know, read about and that kind of shit. So I would write a lot of pop culture related bits and stuff.
Where'd you grow up again?
In LA.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm one of like 11 people. That's like,
you really are.
Yeah.
It's you, Scott Baio.
and we talked to Ruben Paul, and he grew up.
Ruben Paul, and that
was in LA, but he was
Carson.
Out in Carson.
Oh, wow. Shia LaBeouf grew up out here. I used to see him at the same arcade when we were growing up.
What?
But not even like in Hollywood. I grew up in the suburbs.
That sounds like a children's book, like me and Shia LaBeouf at the arcade.
Yeah.
But it actually happened to you.
He would sit there and like, you know, play his whatever games he was playing, and his like grandma or something. Or one is some older relative that wasn't a mom or dad would bring him there, drop him off, and then we would kind of talk here and there because we'd all just be kind of focused on our games or whatever. This is back when there were arcades. That's how
okay, kids. Here's what an arcade is.
You couldn't just turn on your TV and plug in a system.
What
you had
a bummer.
To go to a place.
Yeah.
You know, there have to be some of those kids though that like find out how cool arcades are and like go instead of playing at home, right?
Yeah.
And there was a social aspect of it, and every arcade had that one dude that was like, he was there when it opened, he left when it closed, and he was the master, and like people would gather around him.
You're talking about Billy Mitchell.
And Nick
Billy! You know Billy.
Well, no, I'm from King of Kong, the documentary, which I hope.
I never saw that.
Oh, okay. That's not
Oh, my
know,
God.
I know.
Oh, my God. I almost want to shut down this podcast and turn it on. Nick, for a guy that loves our... Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I know.
King of Kong?
Can you make me a promise?
Yeah.
It's probably one of my favorite movies of
ever.
All time.
Okay.
I'm going to watch...
I'll watch it.
We can add other people. We don't have to make a movie date right now.
Yeah.
But it's fucking great.
I've heard it's good, and then it's one of those that you kind of... You put it in a queue, and then you forget,
Then
you get to another movie, and then it just like escapes you completely until conversation like this comes, and you're like, okay, now I gotta
wait.
Watch
so
it.
I said, like Billy Mitchell, who you will find out when you watch, who is a character of a human being, but also the Donkey Kong world record holder. Real life. So you were also a huge arcade kid.
So I grew up two blocks away from this place called the Enterprise.
Oh my god!
And then it later
got a cool name too.
It later changed its name to a worse one though, Pinball Plus. And you're like, this is stupid.
Oh, Jesus.
For
Pinball
two reasons,
Plus.
Enterprise is way better,
obviously.
And then there's only 8 pinball games, and the rest are upright arcade games. So you're like, what kind of dumb change is that?
Right.
So
also, who really likes pinball?
I mean, this
Jim Jeffries, and that's about it.
Oh, is he a huge pinball
He's obsessed with it.
Ryan Adams, the singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
Not Brian Adams from Canada. Ryan Adams, the cool one. He's a huge... He owns like
How
a ton.
How dare you?
Yeah.
Everything I do it for you is a classic.
It is
a classic.
It's a classic.
But that's it,
though,
right? But that's it. And maybe Summer of 69.
Was that Brian Adams?
Yeah,
that was Brian Adams.
Yeah.
Which ruined a lot of karaoke nights.
Okay.
But...
all right, so it changed.
I will admit that's a good song.
Yeah.
So yeah, it changed, but like the old school guys that would go there a lot, we still called it the Enterprise. And then the newer people were like, what is that? We're like, you don't know. There's no
you were born
then.
Too late. You got to be that older, cool kid.
Yeah.
Or
the grown-ups are talking.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we're 16, and we're saying this to 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
So I would go there all the time. We never had money. and we would just either fish for tokens in the coin slot and use those, or after a while we started like cleaning the windows of the arcade machines and we get paid in tokens.
Wow.
Or we would go, there was a Taco Bell and a McDonald's across the street, and we would go get food for the employees who were just like high school kids that were older than us.
Right.
And there were a couple guys in their 20s that worked there, and which we didn't know at the time, but now we're like, oh, those guys were just like losers. Like they had no direction.
You thought they were the kings of the arcade.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah. We're just like, these guys are cool, man.
They're veterans.
Yeah, they have like their own cars and shit. And we're just like, oh, they're like, they're just nerds.
And then you grew up like, wow, they had their own cars. They could have driven anywhere.
Yeah.
And they still drove.
They could have driven
arcade.
To like a better job.
Yeah, these guys are so cool. They sleep in their cars. They're so cool. Right. They don't even need beds.
Well, there was one dude who worked there, and he was a 24-year-old virgin, and he was trying to be a cop. That was like his thing, but he never could
get
him.
That's not good, by the way. That's a lot of pent-up sexual frustration that he's going to take out on innocent civilians.
He had a temper problem, too, yeah. But he was like, he was the nicest guy until you sort of got him mad, and then he would explode.
Over what?
Over anything. If you told him he wasn't that good at a game, he would lose his mind. If you told him his car wasn't that cool.
Please tell me this guy is not a cop.
I don't know that he became one, but when you look at his personality, it's like he probably did because so many cops are like that.
Yeah. And one thing just sets him off.
Yeah. He had a Pontiac Fiero, like a shitty little, and he was like, it's actually pretty cool, man. I've worked on it. And we would just shit all over this thing. And we're also like 15. None of us had licenses or cars, but he would take it personally. And we're like, dude, you should look at this and be like, shut your kid mouths. I have a car.
You're like coming up with the comebacks. You're coming up with the comebacks for him.
Yeah.
You're like, no, dude, why aren't you hitting us back about this?
We're like, there's so much more to make fun of when it comes to us, you know? So we would get guys like him food, and he would pay us in tokens and shit. And then we eventually learned how to steal tokens directly out of the arcade
machine. I was just going to ask,
And, oh, dude, we would just line our pockets with tokens that we figured out how to... We'd break into the... Because arcade games are set up in cabinets, right?
Yeah.
And they would just reuse the same cabinet with a newer game. So you could just plug in the brains pretty much into it. So the cabinets would just get beaten down and older, and they'd unscrew the same screws and rescrew. So after a while, the screws would go into this like cork board. It's not even like real wood.
Yeah.
And they would not be in there super tight. So you could kind of like jimmy it open, and then you could sneak your hand in and hit the little thing that registers that the token went in. So when you put in a token, this little like metal thing flicks back and it gives you a credit. So we learned how to get in there and just flick this thing.
And that's how you learned how to finger a chick.
Exactly. That was our first sign into life.
So anytime a guy fingered a chick, we call it giving her the token.
Yeah.
Did you put the token in?
Yeah.
Oh, totally gave her the token last night.
Really? That's awesome.
That is genius.
Yeah.
And such a... I would feel bad if you were kids that loved the arcade that didn't figure out a way to fix
the system. Yeah, if you're in there that
much. It actually took us a while because none of us had like the minds of thieves, but we were just like, wait, that screw is a little loose, and we're like, oh shit, I wonder what's behind. And then we're like, dude, I think if we find that button, it'll just... So we would just give ourselves like 50 credits, and then one day I was like,
wait
a minute,
last level of Galaga.
Exactly, Galaga and not Street Puzzle Fighter.
Paperboy was it there?
Yeah, Paperboy they had.
Turtles,
obviously. NFL Blitz, all the Mortal Kombats.
Yeah.
But not all of those were accessible because some of those cabinets were newer. But so one day we were like, you know what? These tokens, after they hit that sensor, they got to fall somewhere, right? And then I'm like, I think if we reach down low enough, there'll be a bucket of tokens there.
Wow.
So one day I was like the tallest. I had the longest reach. So I'm like, all right.
Were you driving this heist too? Were you like the brains?
I like spearheaded the...
Awesome.
I reached down there and then my hand just hit like...
Describe this. That feeling, by the way.
It was the feeling of, you know...
That's like the first time Scrooge hit his fucking...
In the beginning of DuckTales. Did you ever watch that cartoon?
All the time.
Okay, that was another...
You came to the right place.
You're talking to two guys who reference it more on his podcast.
Oh, really? Okay,
Yeah.
So when he jumps into his vault and he's like, you know, swimming down the giant, you know,
millions
sea
of dollars of coins.
Yeah. That's what it felt like. I was like, this is what being in the opening credits of DuckTales feels like.
Like you can conquer the world.
Your hand is just covered in what, like, you know, it's not real silver, but it feels like
it's lead.
You're just like, oh. So I just like reached in and pulled this handful of tokens out. And I was like, guys, we're millionaires. And we're just playing every game that we want. And the employees are just kind of like, how do these guys all of a sudden get money? They never have money.
You're like walking up to people that are dying, like, don't worry, I got you.
You
just throw in a token.
Here's two
tokens. You're like Robin Hood, dude.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's... Incredible.
Yeah. Okay. So we just started playing all these games, and then I just started getting really good, and I was like, my goal is to have my initials on the top 10 of every single arcade game. And there were like 50
or
something.
Holy shit.
And then, so I just started playing every single game and getting good at every single game and getting the top 10 or top 5. There's a game called Top Skater. Have you ever heard of that
one?
Yes.
Yes.
So I was the best at that game that there could be in that in the whole town of anyone that ever went there.
What part of LA again?
In La Crescenta.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, which is north of Glendale, off the 210, west of Pasadena.
No, I know DeLee grew up in La Cañada.
Yeah, so
close?
The town right next door. Yeah. Okay. That's how we kind of first became friends. We're like, you grew up like right down the street. We're like, crazy. Have you ever go here?
Another guy,
go there?
Yeah. So it's like, Pasadena adjacent as well?
Yeah, we are west of Pasadena by like 15 minutes, north of Glendale by like 12, 15 minutes.
Gotcha.
So I started getting really good at that game, and I started getting... There were two versions you could play, the outdoor and then the indoor.
Yeah.
And then...
Wasn't that the game where it actually had the skateboard?
Yeah, the rails you had to hold on. And
right, and then you would, like, slam onto the back.
Exactly,
to make your guy jump.
I got so good at it that I would see other people play, and I'd go, hey, can you guys not slam on the board really hard? It fucks with the calibration. I was just some teenager, and they're like, do you work here? I'm like, no, but I play this game a lot, and I hang out here a lot. So if you guys could just be cool.
Yeah. It's really hard to ollie and do a kickflip when you like slam onto it too hard, and then especially in the street course where I really like that railing where there's like a triple point score at the end of it. If you could
a nose grind, a varial flip's really difficult if you're gonna just beat on the sensor like that. Wow. So unless you're gonna be a dick and keep doing it, otherwise I'm gonna have to ask you to take it easy.
That was like your baby.
It really was. So I played it so much, I got so good that I had the top 20 on both the outdoor and the indoor. And if anyone came in to play it and got on the top 20 at number 17, I go, well, I got to play four times and knock that motherfucker out because I only wanted my initials.
Wow.
So one day I'm playing, and then this guy's watching me, and he goes, dude, you're really good at this. And I was like, oh, thanks. And then I finish, and he looks at the top scores, and they're all my initials. He goes, is that you? I'm like, yeah, that's all me. He's like, dude, I can't seem to get good at this game. And this dude was like in his like late 20s or 30s. He's just some guy. And he goes, I just can't figure out how to like get these combos and all this stuff. He's like, can I give you a couple bucks and just watch you play to see how you do it? I was like, I mean, are you going to kidnap me? Like, is this like how this... Because I was just a kid.
Pretty sure,
like,
this... I saw this as an after-school special one time.
Yeah. And then he goes, well, come out to my van now and let's talk tactics and how to...
Show me my controller, how to use a joystick.
Yeah. Show me how to 50-50 grind on this piece of paper. Slams door, drives me to desert, buries my body.
I call this putting in a token. Yeah. No, that's my move.
Yeah. I'm going to get raped. Yeah. Okay. So he gives me $20 in tokens. And he goes, just play. And I go, all right. And I just played and played and played and played.
You just wanted to study your...
Yeah, my maneuvers. As if this was real skateboarding.
Right.
It was crazy.
As if like the ESPN X Games people were going to walk in that day and be like, wait, are you killing it at Top Skater?
Yeah. I got a story.
Somebody
actually,
call Stussy.
Here's all the Stussy. Here's all the Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
All that you want.
Yeah, and then just like models dressing like Mountain Dew bikinis. I'm just like, what's up, guys? I'm the Top Skater champion. But I have a story sort of about that after.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So he goes, just play. And so I played, and then he's kind of picked up a couple things. And to his credit, he started getting better. Mm-hmm. And he started, like, never would crack the top 20, but his game improved. And I came in a week later, and he was there, and I was like, he's like, hey, man, check this out. And he starts playing. I was like, oh, you've gotten a lot better. So I started getting a little arrogant about my skills.
For sure.
Yeah, with Top Skater and stuff.
You know, proteges.
Yeah. I had a protege, and I had the top 20 on the leaderboard, and people would ask me how to, like, get better.
So that's unbelievable. So you kind of, I mean, let's be honest, kind of started to become the Michael Jordan of this place.
Of that game.
Yeah.
But yeah, and like...
But I mean, your word would spread about your skills.
Yeah, my abilities, yeah. So there was a game called Puzzle Fighter that the Asian kids were really good at. There's a lot of Koreans that grew up out there.
Yeah, okay.
But they were like insanely good at this game. So I started getting good at that. And then so it would be me on player one and then an Asian kid and then a line of other Asian kids waiting to play and me just beating the shit out of all of them one by one by one. One of them wanted to fight me because he thought I was being... being like, I was taunting them too much.
Were you?
Because I was like, oh, watch this move right here. It's like, you're still alive until, oh, now. And then I hit this thing, and all these like gemstone things would crash down a bit. And the guy got really mad at me.
For sure.
But like,
but that's part of the game, shit talking.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And I don't think you've truly lived a male life in America until you've almost come to blows over a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With your buddies.
I'm sure we've all got stories. Yeah. I almost killed my best friend over a game of Madden because he threw my controller and it broke a window.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, it was just, you know, that was in sixth grade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could have killed somebody in the sixth grade. And I was like, definitely like, you just get so fired up because.
Oh, I know.
And so the taunting, especially, too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. My roommate in college, we played Madden all the time. He was always the Cowboys. I was always the Broncos. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point where, like, he bought about 8 really cheap PlayStation controllers because he knew he would break them.
Right.
Like, he knew he would just get so frustrated that he would just chuck them against the wall. Yeah. It's like, God damn it!
Yeah.
It does feel good to do that.
Oh, it feels so good.
Because you're blaming the controller as if it's its fault. You're like, if this button worked better, and then you throw it and you feel good, and then you're like, now I need a new controller.
Yeah, exactly.
Would you ever lose your cool, or was it always giving it out?
I would lose my cool all the fucking time. Yeah. I have punched so many video game screens. I've tried to break Super Nintendo controllers with my, and I'm just, I'd just be like, fucking, I would yell at it for not breaking.
Wow.
Like, I would get so mad because I'd be so competitive with myself.
Yeah.
And that was sports for me. It was like, the, you know,
yeah, because you were not an athlete.
No. Okay. I played recreationally basketball with my friends and I was like pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, so my arrogance with Top Skater got to the point where this employee was like, hey, man, you know that that guy that was just playing that game, he was asking who the top scorers were and who got them all. And I'm like, did you tell him it was me? He's like, yeah. He goes, you know, he works for EGM Monthly.
Which is what?
Electronic Gaming
Monthly. Shit.
So EGM. Okay. And that was like the big magazine back in, when there were magazines. And, and for video games.
It went Nintendo Power then EGM.
And that one, yeah. And I think there was another one that I can't remember the name. But
Nintendo Power.
So
Jesus.
He goes, yeah, that guy works for that magazine and he wants to like talk to you about how good. And I was like, are you serious?
This seems like the plot of a mid-90s Disney movie.
Yeah, right?
Like,
yeah. And then I get super successful.
Well, hey, it kind of was The Wizard with Fred Savage.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I remember that movie.
That's true.
Please tell me you've seen that too.
I saw it when I was a kid.
Okay.
My favorite
remember
line.
His brother?
My favorite line.
Christian Slater's in it.
Movie.
And Bo Bridges.
Yes.
Oh my god, this is like a time warp right
it's
now.
It's unreal. That movie Fred Savage, they go on a road trip to the video game championships.
Yeah,
you're going to Nationals.
And then during the final game or during like the there's like that
Super Mario 3.
There's that bad video game player. Yeah. I'll know what his name was. Yeah. But then at some point he busts out in perfect product placement, the best product placement in the history of all the movies. He busts out something called a Nintendo Power Glove.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Puts that on, fucks up the wizard, and then just looks at him and goes, "The Power Glove. It's so bad." And then he like kissed his fingers.
Yeah.
And you just thought like,
everybody bought one after that.
That's the most evil man on the planet. And then like everyone ran out and bought Power Gloves.
That's so funny, dude.
But that's a real, okay, well, this kid didn't get scouted, but the idea that, so they said what to you? EGM?
Well, he goes, no, the employee goes, he wants to come back and interview. He said he's going to come back tomorrow. And I was like, dude, what time? I'll be here. He's like, anywhere between like 6 p.m. and 10 p.m. And I was like, dude, I'll be here. So I get there like 5:30. I'm hanging out all night. No show. I'm like, where's this guy? He's like, yeah, he called and said he wasn't going to be able to make it, but he'll come by tomorrow around the same time. I'm like, fuck, all right.
He wants to see how bad you want it.
Yeah. I didn't know. I assumed, I'm like, dude, whatever this guy wants, I'll come back.
He's mind-fucking a 16. You were 16, right?
I was like somewhere, 15, 16. And then, so I came back the next night, and he wasn't there. And he goes, "Dude, I don't know what. He didn't even call this time. He just didn't show up." He's like, "But he'll be back." He said he really, really wants to do this. And I was like, "All right." So a few days goes by, and the employee doesn't bring it up. And I go, "Hey, dude, whatever happened to that EGM magazine writer guy?" And he goes, "What?" And I go, "The guy you said you saw playing Top Skater that worked for the magazine said he wanted to interview me." He goes, "Oh yeah, man, I just made that up. I was just fucking with you."
That son of a
and
bitch.
And I just stared at him.
Where's this guy, dude?
I was like, you motherfucker.
Oh, fuck.
And he goes, that's a lesson in like being an arrogant and like Mr. Show-Off know-it-all about that game. And I was like, how? I'm like, yeah, maybe I was like, I thought I was like kind of hot shit, but
no,
you can't do that to
an extreme level of fuckery. Yeah.
And by the way, who's the guy working there
that's like, okay, all the things are going on in the world. There is poverty, there is disease, there is famine, but this guy thinks he's good at top skater, time to be a hero.
Yeah, I'll show him.
Yeah, let's bring him down a peg.
And he totally had forgotten about it completely. Meanwhile, the last 4 days, I'm just like, dude, this is the fucking coolest thing.
You thought your life was about to change.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, oh, that my God, I'm going to be the first video game celebrity.
I know.
Like, talk about a giant prank. Kids are the worst, man. Some kid came up to me. We've talked about this before, where when I was, my folks split up when I was 9. Some kid came to me on the playground like it, I think a year later, and was like, hey, man, my mom told me your parents got back together. And I was like, holy shit, what?
Dude,
life, I'm like, this is the greatest day ever. I'm fucking like just playing even harder at fucking kickball. I'm just like, this is the greatest day ever. I go home, I'm like, mom, yeah. She's like, what? No. And I'm like, what? Oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, my God. What did you do to that kid the next day?
I mean, well, rest in peace, Jacob Seidlinger. No,
I had to make him disappear. He had to go.
He found that guy that had the van that wanted the lessons. Right,
I think I just called him out. I think I just said, like, why did you do that? Like, and he was like, yeah, it's funny. And I was like, that was, like, really mean. You know, that's when mean was still, like, a term you used.
Right.
And I was like, I felt really bad about that. I, like, cried a lot. He was like, I was joking, like, so defensive. Like, well, that's on you for being a pussy about it. Like, I was just joking.
Oh,
yeah,
man. God.
Did you have a pretty good childhood?
It was pretty good. I mean, I was, like, I didn't have a lot of, like, friends. When I look back, it was, like, it wasn't that bad. But, like, I had not a lot of friends and a lot of social anxiety and didn't have, like, a place to fit in. And everything was just really uncomfortable. But, like,
How would you fit in? How did you, like, eventually?
I mean, being funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. The classic story of how you became a comedian is, like, that was the one thing that got you positive attention.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's my identity now. Here we go.
Now, you had anxiety and you were like, all right, eventually I need to like, I mean, were parents or teachers saying, hey, you need to participate, you need to be more social. And you're like, well, I don't feel comfortable doing that. But then when you found comedy, you're like, oh, that makes me want to.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Like when you're a kid, you don't know what social anxiety is or how, you just know that you're scared to like be confident about things or like get involved and meet new people and you know, express yourself or whatever.
Raise your hand and even speak in front of the class.
So the two ways I did it were like be funny and then get in trouble. So one kind of led to the other because in being funny in class, you're going to get in trouble because you're being disruptive.
Yeah.
So then I was like, I can do that and that's good, or I can just be a troublemaker as well, and that'll get me attention. And none of it was intentional. You just kind of were like, I want attention.
The two go hand in hand, yeah.
Yeah, so you kind of just start doing it, you know, and then it becomes your identity. So I would get kicked out of classes all the time.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I was a pretty bad kid.
What was some of the most disruptive things you did?
Once there was this girl that kept throwing shit at me. This was fourth grade. So I was sitting in front of her, and then she just kept pelting me with shit in the back of the head, and I was like, I am going to fucking explode. And then I was just trying to like stay calm, and then she did it again, and then she did it again, and then I got up, and I was just like, fucking stop it, and I kicked my desk. It was back when they had the desk with the desk bar and the chair were connected.
Yes.
I kicked it so hard that the whole thing just lifted off the ground and just fucking flew. Not at her, but in her direction.
Right.
Because I was just seeing red. I was just like, fucking stop it. And I kicked the desk and it just went flying. And just the whole classroom, just you heard this gasp and then dead silence.
Did it knock her out? Like,
no, it didn't even hit her. It hit like part of the front of her desk. And then,
but you sent a desk flying and that desk, I mean, it looks like it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, but it went somewhere. And then I went somewhere, which was outside, be yelled at for 10 minutes. And the teacher was like, look, you have to stop acting like this. You're a good kid. You're a smart kid. You need to apply yourself. You can't be blowing up and doing all this stuff.
Did you even tell her what was happening?
I did, but she's like, look, I understand, and I'm going to talk to her about
that. She's on her period, all right?
Like, you know how these bitches get. I was like, whoa, geez, you're a cool teacher all of a sudden. You just called her a bitch. This is crazy. You want to hang out with her?
Yeah. On my side? You want to get a cup of coffee?
Yeah. And she was so hot, too, the teacher.
Of course.
So, of course, I listened to her every word. I'm like, I'll do whatever you want.
Dude, I'm so sorry. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, yeah.
Fourth grade is the prime age to have a crush on a teacher. I think that's when it begins, quite honestly. For me, it was third grade. But that's just because, you know, I mean, hey, I was shaving and deodorant in sixth grade.
Yeah, you
but,
had this voice in the fourth grade.
Sure. Yeah. So anyway. Yeah. I thought you would have come to
I'll tell you what four plus three is.
Want to come to my T-ball game. You know, right. I did invite my third grade teacher to a baseball game. Her name was Miss Robish. If you're out there, Miss Robish, I can't remember her first name.
There's still a chance at love, Miss Robish.
Wow, no, she's probably in her fucking 60s now.
I mean, like I said, there's still a chance for love, Miss Robish.
Hey, right. I ain't hating. If she still looks good. But so I invited her to my baseball game, and she brought her boyfriend. And I remember showing up.
Snap.
And he shows up, and she's like, hey, this is my boyfriend, like Todd. Uh-huh. And I'm just looking at him, and in my head, I'm like, hey, bitch, I don't remember telling you there was a plus one for this shit. Like, I said, Miss Robish, do you want to come to my baseball game?
Not, do you want to come hold hands?
And I remember just staring at him, and the dude even said, because as a kid, you don't mask.
No.
I'm not trying to act or put on the, you know, if you're at a party now as an adult and you see an ex and you can be like, hey, what's up? Yeah, and you can, like,
you can fake it.
I couldn't fake it. So I just stared at this guy, didn't say anything. And he goes, you going to say something, man? He goes, what, did you think she didn't have a boyfriend? And I was like,
he said that?
Yeah, man.
He's like,
and
step
just,
into a third grader.
Dude, I'll never forget it because
this reminds me of a Simpsons episode, actually. Now that I think about it. But go ahead.
I'm just staring at him like,
Bart and the babysitter.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Great call.
Yeah, you won't be needing this anymore. And the guy's name was Todd.
And what was the babysitter's name? The babysitter bandit, right? No, that was a different one. No,
it was played by the girl from Roseanne.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
Daphne.
So,
no. What was her name?
Arlene.
Arlene.
Yeah. It's called Google, people.
All right. Yeah. But so I just, you know, stared at him so hard and so angry that he picked up on it and then, started talking shit, but...
What a dick.
And that ended my crush. I was like, then I was in class and I would, you know, I started acting out more after that. You know, the next time I got in trouble... I memorized the Martin Luther King "I Have a Dream" speech, and when we watched the video, I stood up in the back and like lip synced the whole thing to two of my friends, like That's really funny. Like hammy, and they're dying laughing. And she got so pissed, and you know, if I had enough, you know, chutzpah at that age, I would have been like, "You're a dick tease.
Yeah.
You fucked with my emotions."
Right. Are you mad at me? Why don't you go cry about it to your boyfriend that I didn't know even existed?
Yeah.
Right.
Wait, and now that I'm older, I think like I can look at a situation like that and go, imagine being that boyfriend to where you're like, hey, babe, it's Saturday. What are we going to do? And she goes, let's go to my one of my kids' Little League games.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, okay.
Why
are we doing that? Because he has a crush on me and it's kind of cute. Well, I'm going to fuck this kid's life up.
What an asshole. What a dick.
So, all right, so your teacher, what was her name? Do you remember?
Miss Dexter.
There you go.
Yeah, she ended up leaving the school and moving to San Francisco.
Soul crushing.
Yeah, and I was like, man. I remember once in, I think it was fourth grade, actually, I had a crush on this girl that was in second grade. And then... her name was Brittany, and I was like, dude.
Forbidden love.
I love this girl, right? She was so pretty. She was like blondish. I'm like, I think blue eyes or something like that. She was like the most perfect looking girl at the time. So I told my mom about it, and I was like, I really like this girl. And how do I show her? How do I tell her? And she goes, oh, that's really sweet. Maybe you should tell her or give her a present or whatever. So I got in my head, I'm going to get her flowers. And
at an early age, isn't it crazy? Women are like, shower them with gifts. They'll let them know.
Yeah.
But that's what you do. Like, what else are you going to do with that?
Totally.
Age? Yeah.
And then, and so I got her. Oh, no, that wasn't Brittany. That was a different girl. But same scenario. So I went and got flowers.
You're the Lothario.
I know. Well, I wish any of it worked. But so I got her flowers, and then I gave them to her at school, like right after class or at lunch or something like that.
Bold move, by the way. Not an easy thing.
No, no.
To get them and you're holding on to them all day.
Yeah.
Thinking about it all day.
Yeah.
And then what?
And people are probably asking you, like, hey, who are the flowers for? You're like, it's for Brittany.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or what was her name? I can't remember her name.
Whatever.
And then
Letitia.
It would be great. A name that, how could you forget that? I'm like, what was it? Was it Sarah? Oh, Letitia.
Oh, yeah.
So I gave them to her and she was like, oh, thank you. And then she was like, oh, you're very nice. Oh, you know, whatever. And then she ended up not coming to school the next day and then told her mom, who then told the principal what happened, and it made her really uncomfortable. So I got in trouble.
What the
fuck? For getting a girl flowers?
What?
So I got pulled out of class, and then I think it was her teacher and the principal were like, so we need to talk to you about this situation. You know, you gave this girl flowers and stuff, and you know that was a nice gesture, but it made her uncomfortable, and she didn't feel comfortable enough to even come to school, so we're going to have to ask that you not do anything like that. And I was like, I didn't go up and just put my hand up her skirt or whatever. It was a romantic gesture, I thought.
Flowers.
And then I got in trouble
That's crazy.
And then you tell him, like, by the way, my mom, who I'm pretty sure is an actual lady, she was the one that told me to do it? So
they were just like, you know, you can't do that because it made her uncomfortable. God. And I was like, what? Okay.
That must have happened prior to you that another girl like got made uncomfortable to where they had to start implementing that rule of like, boys can't make girls feel weird.
Yeah, or feel anything apparently.
Feel anything. All,
yeah. So it might have been the beginning because I remember by the time I was in like eighth grade, the sexual harassment no tolerance
movement.
Was like in full effect.
Yeah,
right. So maybe by fourth and fifth grade, it was kind of beginning at the middle school, high school level and trickling down to the elementary. So they were probably like, look, even if it's something that is a nice gesture, if it makes a girl feel uncomfortable in anything resembling a sexual manner, like love or like, or I want to kiss you or whatever, just squash
Jesus.
It. So I think that's what it was because, I mean, I didn't do anything to like make her feel weird and any like creepy. I didn't even know how to be creepy at 10.
By the way, you're so innocent.
What was the one thing, because I'm curious, because you're sober too, right?
Yeah, 3.5 years.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Well done.
Was there, and you can answer one of these or both of these, but one moment that the principal goes, Nick Youssef, you're out of here.
Yeah.
And was there one moment where you said to Booze, you're out of here? Like, what was the...
I have examples for both of those.
Great.
Okay.
So the first one, you're out of here. The one I remember the most, and forgive me if I've told this on another podcast, I may have, but I was in PE, and we were always like, we never wanted to play any of the things. We'd either never get dressed, or if we did, we'd pick the easiest sport.
Sometimes wear your own clothes, and they'd be like, oh, Nick, put on the PE shirt.
Yeah, and I'm like, I left him at home. Or we would not wash them for so long that they would just be so dirty that teacher's like, I don't want you wearing that. Like, just stay in your regular clothes.
Probably getting sick.
We win!
Yeah.
We win. And then we'd sneak to the end of the playground and, like, smoke cigarettes or whatever. Like, ha-ha,
so you smoked cigarettes early on.
Yeah, I kind of, like, on and off when I was, like, from 12 or 13 to, like, 16, 17. Then I quit from 18 to 21, and then I started from 21.
Yeah.
Thanks to the Comedy Store. Hanging out at clubs.
Like, you got to have a vice, and it's like, if you cut out booze, and that's a big one.
Yeah.
So you're at PE. And
right. So we picked tennis because that was the easiest.
Yeah. Sure.
And you could just stand there.
Just do home run derby and just smack tennis balls as hard
exactly.
as you can.
Exactly. And it's fun. Perfect. It gets out some, like, you know,
shots fired, Pete Sampras. It ain't that tough.
Yeah. And so we picked that one for that reason, and because it was kind of tucked off around the corner, and then the PE teacher would always be down on the lower level because he could watch the handball and basketball and football all at the same time.
Yep.
So we're like, oh, we can sneak off here and not even really play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we started kind of playing a little, and then I started getting a handle on it and getting a little competitive. So then we just kind of started playing.
Yeah.
And then one day I got so mad because I kept hitting the ball on the net. And then it would either not go over or go over, but you can only do that once on a serve,
right.
I think, or whatever the rule was. And it kept happening because I was trying to get it to slice right over the net and make it hard for the opponent to hit at all. So, and I was just way beyond my skill level, but I was like, I'm going to get this good
of
at
course.
It.
Yeah.
And so I was reaching so far, and it was something I couldn't even do, that I would start getting mad that I couldn't do this thing that you'd have to be so good to do.
Sure.
So one day, I just got so furious with the ball hitting that I took the racket and just flung it as hard as I could into the fence.
Oh, God.
And, of course, at that moment...
McEnroe style.
Yeah. Would he have a
John McEnroe
temper?
Was the biggest temper really? Of all... Yeah. Yeah, throw rackets
throw
all the
rackets.
Time.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was the McEnroe of my high school. Just minus being good on any level at all. So
all the anger, none of the skill.
Yeah, exactly. So this thing just went and just flung into the fence. And of course, at that moment, at the day I decided to do it, was when the PE teacher was rounding the corner to see how the tennis kids were coming along.
No.
Right.
He rounds the corner, and this racket is just cutting through the air.
Hey, guys, how you doing? Did he have some sort of dialogue pre-smack?
Before he could even say a word, that was the first thing he saw, and then he immediately knew it was me. He just sees that. He's like, what the hell was that? Nick, that was you, right?
Jesus.
And I was like, yeah, it was. And he's like, why are you throwing tennis rackets? I'm like, because the fucking thing won't go over the fence. And he's like, okay, first of all, you can't throw rackets. And B, you're cursing. You're out of here. Go to the dean's office. You're done. And I was like, well, it's not my fault anyway. It was never my fault.
Sure.
No matter what I did, that was obviously always my fault. It was never my fault.
Well, I mean, the racket wasn't cooperating.
Yeah, it was a racket, much like with the controllers.
Yeah.
It's the controller's fault.
Right.
These Nintendo guys are setting me up.
Now that I think about it, I have seen you try to work out a new bit. It doesn't go well, and you take the mic and throw it off the stage.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll unplug it and then just hurl it against the wall. It's the microphone's fault.
Obviously.
And then I get home and break a pen because it's the pen's fault for not writing. Oh, computer, you think you're getting away with this too? Break that. It's the key's fault. They weren't typing right.
Yeah.
It's in my head, so funny, but it's not coming out with the tools necessary.
That's I also feel like, though, because my buddy is a principal at elementary school, or middle school, and he says
I hate him already.
He says so often, though, he's a great dude because he comes down on these teachers who so quickly toss kids out because they're fucking lazy. So I mean, was there a part of that, or were you really that obnoxious?
I was obnoxious, I was lazy, and I was always instigating. I always needed, I had such a problem with authority.
Yeah.
That if you were in a
position...
So it
was building up. This was...
Yeah. I would, if you were in a position of authority, I didn't like you, and I would do whatever I can to make you lose your temper because I just had no respect for it. Even my first few years in comedy, me and a couple comics had, like, you know, who could get banned from more open mics.
Wow.
Yeah, I hit 13 or 14 open mics by the time I stopped doing them. I was just banned from 13.
Because
I couldn't go.
How would you... That's crazy.
Go too long? Or
I would run the light.
Yeah.
I would curse if you weren't supposed to.
Uh-huh.
I would get into arguments with the host because I was just like, you can't tell me what to do.
Wow.
I'm just not going to stand for it.
And it was a sport for you almost.
Yeah, I'm like, you can't tell me not to curse. I can do whatever I want. Or the owners of like coffee shops and stuff, you can't curse. Fuck you, I'm cursing. They kick me out. Yeah.
And then finally, I mean, I guess it's just what, growing up? Or
just growing up,
Were you drinking at this point too? Getting kicked out of open mics?
No. No. When I was from 18 to 21, I never, because I knew better. I couldn't be drinking and driving because you have to blow a .000 when you're under 21. And I was just like, and I wasn't really just like a big drinker or anything. A little bit when I was a teenager. And then I just knew better because I was like, I need to do comedy. If I get a fucking DUI because I went to a party and had a drink, it was just what wasn't working.
Yeah. So did you isolate? Did you have friends when you started to come up doing stand-up, or were you isolating yourself from everybody?
I made friends because I knew I kind of had to because I wanted to find out. This is before the internet, that you had to find out where open mics were. You couldn't go to Comedy
Jesus
Bureau
Christ,
or wherever. So I made friends. We all kind of had that thing in common. We were all outsiders kind of getting into this thing. None of us knew anyone. And I was the youngest, so... By years and years, you know, everyone I knew was in their 20s, so they would treat me like the kid we got to kind of watch out for. And
who were like your guys? I started with
like David Taylor, Ari Shaffir. Who else was around when I first started? So many people are gone. Like had just quit.
Well, sure,
just, wow. James Painter. If you were around when that guy was there, no.
Bobby was not too far.
Bobby Lee,
ahead of you,
I met when I first my first year in comedy. He was hosting the Comedy Store open mic, so he would always put me on. So we became friends pretty early.
That's awesome.
I used to do the Westwood Bruco open mic a lot, so that would be like guys
Adam
like
Hunter.
Adam Hunter. No, he had a show. Yeah, it was a Tuesday night open mic.
Oh, okay.
But that was like, I mean, every Tuesday it was Brody Stevens, Maria Bamford, Zach Galifianakis, Bob Oshak, Joe Wagner, Aaron Lee were there a lot, Bill Dwyer, the Sklar Brothers, all those guys were on a weekly basis, and I was like this 18, 19-year-old kid.
And the Bruco, for those of you who have never been, is in Westwood where UCLA is, which is upstairs of this big campus college bar.
Yeah.
But a tiny little like attic of a room that was sometimes packed and great and sometimes four people. But everybody knew that it was – there was never no – I always felt so comfortable to do anything new. Even though there's so many comics there, I was like, hey, whatever. Yeah. Like, everyone knows what this room is. It's
that was like the scariest open mic in town, though, because guys on that level, they weren't famous or anything back then. But Zach was just a dude.
But
he was respected. Oh yeah,
but like,
because his skill level was so high.
What was he doing when he was?
He was just doing like kind of he started to do the weirder, more conceptual stuff and the great one liners and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was starting to. It was right around or right before the time he did a set on Letterman when Garofalo hosted. That's the one that kind of broke him. It was kind of right before or around that time.
Go ahead.
I started making friends in comedy and being able to express myself and do that kind of started calming me down and all that shit. So I wasn't like so insane.
And getting some, and obviously probably finding out that you were good at it, right? And starting to figure it out.
Yeah, getting a little validation for something that was that felt real.
And then you're like, all right, well, I don't want to fuck this up. Right. So I have to probably tone it down a bit.
Yeah, and in certain scenarios. There were still, I mean, look, I had a lot of like, you know, ideals. I was like, when you're young, you're extra idealistic and you don't know better in certain arenas. So you were just like, I believe this should be this way. So fuck you if you don't agree.
Yeah.
And a lot of that. And, it, you know, it took some time to learn how to be an adult and stuff. And, you know, I got away with a lot because I was, they're like, he's just a kid. He's just 19. He's just 20. He doesn't know.
And I think that is valid.
Yeah. Sure, totally.
I mean, because it's true. You don't know.
When I look at fucking Bieber and I'm like, dude, the worst he... People were like, can you believe he peed in a fucking trash can in public? He bought a monkey. He smoked weed on a plane. Yeah. I'm like, he's fucking 20, man.
I had a whole bit on Justin Bieber that was that exact angle. I was, because everyone makes fun of him, and I had a whole bit where I defended his behavior because maybe when I look back,
related
a part
hard
of me,
man.
I was like, I was kind of like
that. 1,000% you were.
Because you would essentially, like, you were Bieber, but without the money and fame.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Bieber McEnroe is the name of your next album.
right. That bit is on my first album.
Yes.
Yeah. And I not owning this.
Yes.
Yeah. And I never do the bit anymore, but it's on that album.
Yeah.
Which just I released for free on my podcast with Kevin Christie.
Oh, shit.
So it's the last bonus episode, which is the one before this new one that came out this week.
Podcast Occasionally Awesome.
Occasionally Awesome, So you can download that for free. And if you want, it's all one track. But if you want it multiple tracks, buy it on iTunes.
And your album you also released on vinyl?
Yeah.
Why'd you do that?
Because I'm an obnoxious hipster.
First of all, let me say, listen to the album you recorded at La Jolla Comedy Store.
Yes.
It's fucking great, dude.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's called Stop Not Owning This.
Go get it right now or after this podcast on iTunes, like, or for free on your...
For free on the podcast on SoundCloud. So you can find it there and click the download button.
So go to SoundCloud and type in Stop Not Owning This.
Or type in Occasionally Awesome, and then it'll say bonus episode, and then my name in the album.
Okay, great.
Or it's on Spotify, too, or all the streaming ones. So it's kind of everywhere, and on vinyl. Well, so that story was because vinyl's coming back, kind of sales, and a lot of bands are releasing shit. So my buddy Jonah Ray, who...
people know from The Meltdown.
From The Meltdown, yes. And the Nerdist podcast. Mm-hmm. He was like, hey, I'm starting a vinyl label under a Special Thing Records, which is... They also release a lot of comedy on vinyl. So he's like, I'm going to start a label called Literally Figurative, and I want to release albums from comics I love and friends of mine. And Jonah and I is another one. He used to go to the Brew Co. early on. We've known each other 14 years, forever.
Who loves music more, you or him? Because you might be, out of all my friends, I don't know anybody who is more... just has great taste, but also is like just constantly... I mean, I feel like you probably find a new band every week. Is that safe to say?
Probably, yeah. Jonah is way better at finding like more obscure bands that even I'm like, who? You know, he's really good at that. He comes from that like do-it-yourself punk rock background, so he's really into that kind of stuff, and he has great taste in music. So he was like, I'm starting a label, and I wanna release stuff on vinyl, and I want you to be the first release. And I was like, dude, I would love
that's
that.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then we put it out there. I did a spot on the Meltdown show the day before the release, and he gave out a copy of the album.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's a great dude.
How cool is that to see, for being a big music fan as you are, to see your shit in vinyl form?
It was crazy. The best part was being able to go to Amoeba Records and seeing it in Amoeba Records.
Wow. You've probably been there so many times.
Oh, countless times.
Trying to get your fucking Phil Collins Greatest Hits album.
Right, yeah.
You do.
And seeing that in that stack.
Yeah. It was crazy,
and I mean, because now, because we can't exactly have, I guess you can kind of hear it on some serious stations, but the way they did it in like every movie about a band, where the band's like driving down the road, and it's like, and now next is a new band that we just got, and then they hear their song on the radio, and they just go ape shit.
Yeah.
For us, it's like to see our stuff in a record store. I used to go to Best Buy and just go to the comedy section and just look through all the albums and just pick out stuff that I didn't have and be like, someday I'm going to have stuff here. Yeah. And so that's just got to be so cool.
Was the coolest. Seeing it on vinyl was awesome. And then seeing it in a record store I've been going to for 15 years.
And then to see a hipster pick it up and go,
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's go. Whatever. Yeah.
You're like, that hurt, but I'm still been kind of dreaming at this moment. So right. Awesome.
Exactly.
Have you always been, has music always been a big part of, because that's, I mean, shit, man, you came with me to the Head and the Heart concert.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like that's
still one of the coolest things.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, because that band and that first album of theirs really meant a lot to me. When around the time I quit drinking, I was like,
"Oh shit!"
I was listening to that album a lot, and there were certain songs that kind of reminded me of going through struggles and weird personal things like that. So I had a real like attachment to that
album.
So when you were like, "Let's go to the show," I was like, "Dude!" And then to meet them and hang out with them,
dude,
and to see how cool, I was really kind of reticent about doing that because I'm like, I don't like meeting my heroes.
Sure,
and you really love them that much.
Well, I mean. That album a lot.
Of course.
Yeah. And they're very talented, yeah. And they turn out to be very cool. But anyone that I even like I use heroes just in the general sense.
I totally hear you.
Even if it's a band I'm into and they make music I like, I'm always like, I don't know if I want to meet them because sometimes artists are fucking dicks.
And you want to keep them up there because it feels good to keep them up
right.
there.
Exactly. And you want them to stay. You want them to be that like platonic ideal that you have created for whatever it is, you know? Mm-hmm. So you want to kind of leave it that way. And then when you meet them, it could rip that apart in any way, either severely or just a little. You're like, oh, I thought they had similar taste in this as I did. Or
so after the show, when because my friend Charity, Theo, I've got to know the whole band, but Charity and I went to high school, and she's a phenomenal musician.
She's the sweetest girl.
The sweetest.
She's the fiddle player?
Wow.
Violin player?
Wow.
Dear.
Yeah. Yes, violin player and singer.
And singer.
And so she, so when I was we're going to go back.
I'm with it.
did you have any sort of like apprehension? Were you?
I did for a minute, but then, and I've told other people this too. They're like, oh, you met them. And they were like, well, why did you end up doing it? And I swear to God, I tell them this, and not just because I'm on your podcast. And I was like, Adam Ray's such a good dude that he wouldn't be friends with people that were probably like entitled, fucking vain, rock star dickheads.
They just fist bumped in a magical moment.
Yeah. I don't visualize you hanging out with like douchebag rock star dudes that are dicks to everybody.
No.
And I'm like, if he's friends with her, she's going to be cool.
Yeah.
So I went back there, and then we hung out until like 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, dude.
And they were the greatest.
It was rad. Stuck in the green room, and they that was rad. That venue, too, it was
the Wiltern.
Wiltern.
Yeah.
Which is just a great venue
for
shows.
Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah.
Okay, so, but you've always had a fascination for just music all over.
It was kind of the first thing I really connected with, and that kind of made me feel like less alone in the world, you know? I was like, these bands that have these songs that I really identify with, and I can just sit there and listen to this stuff. And if I'm going to be at home in my room with no friends, I can listen to bands that are singing about either fun shit or depressing shit if I'm feeling that. And I just really, really started taking to that form of expression being like the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I need to consume all the music I can and get it wherever I can. And back then, you couldn't just type in whatever and start listening to shit on Spotify.
Right, you had to go find it.
Yeah, you had to borrow CDs or like have your friend make a copy onto a cassette tape.
Record it off the radio, which is always weird because you always had the DJ coming in and interrupting the opening lick of the song. You're like, God damn it.
And that was after you called K-Rock 30,000 times to get something heard. And K-Rock was the hardest station to get through to because it was so popular. You'd just be, busy, 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 busy.
Holy
and eventually
shit.
You'd get through and you're like, play this Sublime song or whatever. I was into Pennywise or whatever.
You know,
Southern California themed thing that they would always play.
Has there been a band that you've discovered recently that, like, how obscure have you got? Like, have you found yourself in a conversation being like, yo, there's this, these two 15-year-old Asian kids from Sweden that do all, you know, Tracy Chapman covers?
Yeah.
Or, like, I mean, is there just something
They're actually a good duo. Well, that'd be great if that was a real thing.
I believed you.
I feel like it's not impossible. At this, I'm also a big advocate of, at this stage in life, anything you say in jest is probably not far removed from actually being
true. There's probably something out there.
So, but I mean, was there a group or from a specific type of music that you got introduced to and you were like, oh shit, this is...
I mean, now as an adult now, I'm less interested in like finding the most obscure possible thing because it's time consuming and it's like, I have other things to do, so I'm not like spending... When you're in your early 20s and mid-20s, you don't have much of a life.
Yeah.
So you're like going to every concert and talking about music a lot more and finding all the cool shit. And now I'm more like, I'll find new stuff, you know, here and there, but I used to kind of gravitate to the things that you've grown to really love. Like, I'm a big Wilco fan. Yeah. I love Radiohead. TV on the Radio, Radiohead.
Yeah, I think it's even in the description of your podcast, Occasionally Awesome. Like, these two guys are going to talk about Radiohead way too much.
Yeah.
You have a great bit on your album, Stop Not Owning This.
Yes.
Stop Not Owning It or This.
This.
Yes. Yeah. We talk about just... there's no band worthy of standing for 3 hours anymore. And then you basically break down with Radiohead, like, the whole journey of being able to control the concert and, like, oh, they didn't play my favorite song? Well, let me fucking play it while I'm in the car with my feet up, getting in and out, and home.
Right.
Like, it's so fucking true. I butchered your bit. I'm sorry. I loved it because I'm that exact same.
Yeah.
I mean, I love concerts too. But rarely have I been to one at this point in life where I'm like, oh yeah, that was I went and saw Hall & Oates in San Diego about 5 months ago, and I was definitely by far
humble brag.
We get it.
We get it. Your life is awesome. You surround every day with Hall & Oates.
Right.
If I could start every day with a Hall & Oates concert, I would. Yeah. But I was by far the youngest person there, and we got yelled at so much by the older peeps there that were like, you know, that wanted to sit and enjoy the show. And I was like,
No, I'm going to dance.
I wanted to stand and dance. And finally, they all stood up at the very end. But then I was like, well, you know, I guess, I mean, I don't want to stand at this age for the whole thing. But at their age, I can't imagine.
Yeah, there's certain, like, that bit was mostly about, like, festivals, and those, I don't have the energy.
Yeah, yeah. You did it. Remember we did the all-improv show at the Nerdist? Where it was,
it was the, like, new material. Yeah.
And you did some, and you did some bit you'd never done about, I think you'd just gone to Coachella. Or Bonnaroo?
Maybe it was Coachella. What year did we do that show?
A year ago.
Remember what the material was.
There's something about the mud and the.
Where people they're going to, like, these festivals and dressing retro. They're dressing from an era that they were never with or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're, like, creating their own Woodstock mud. But I'm like, you're doing it with, like, Fiji water. Like, it's not the same thing. You know, I forgot
so
all about
fun.
It.
It's like that. Dude. Like that was rain and necessity and boredom and drugs. And you're just like, that could be us. And then pour Fiji water on.
Yeah, you're acting like a hippie, but you're wearing, like, a $900 hippie outfit you get at Barney's. And you're pouring Fiji water into dirt that you're turning into Woodstock mud or whatever it was.
So funny.
What do you guys talk about on your podcast? Occasionally Awesome.
We talk about style a lot, music, art. Kevin's like Kevin Christie, the co-host. He is an artist by trade and an actor. Yeah, he went to Art Center Pasadena, and he's like a professional artist.
Yeah, he's done covers for
album covers. He's done a couple, like, Kings of Leon ones, and some concert posters, and he's had, like, work. In certain magazines, I think, like, New Yorker and things like that. So he's been commissioned to do that kind of stuff. So he's, like, a legit artist. So we'll talk about that because a lot of people don't know a lot about art, myself included. So we're like, why don't we do an introduction to, like, you know, what to look for when you go to a gallery?
And, yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So we've done that. We've done, like, fashion-related things. We did a watch episode, like, how to get into watches. And
like, you're a really stylish guy. You've written stuff for Esquire magazine.
Yeah.
So what I would say is, what do you, like, in terms, do you have any common tips for guys or common mistakes that guys make when it comes to fashion?
I would say, I mean, the one general piece of advice I always say is try and dress your age. You know, so if you're 35 and you see what the 22-year-olds are wearing and it doesn't really fit your age group, unless you're like a 35-year-old who's in a rock band, then it's like, wear the tight jeans
bracelets.
The bracelets and the crazy hair or whatever. But like, there comes a point, and I don't want to ever tell people, like, don't act young or be young at heart or whatever, but, like, you kind of are going to look a little ridiculous.
Hey, man, I had to go through a moment, probably when I was, like, 29, when I had to go through my closet and be like, all right, there's way too many shirts with skulls on them.
Yeah, exactly.
Brad just stood in front of his closet and goes, if you are a dragon or a snake and you're on a shirt, please get out.
Please
and,
leave.
And I had to have that moment, and it was, and I think... It might have even been Yeah, I know exactly the moment that it happened. I was headlining the Cincinnati Funny Bone, and they showed like a preview video, and they accidentally showed my actual preview video, even though I was headlining that weekend.
Yeah.
And in the preview video, it was my clip from Live at Gotham, where I'm wearing a shirt that has two dragons on it.
Yeah.
And that night, 4 years later, I'm wearing the same shirt that has two dragons on it.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, this has got to stop.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Like, there's a way, I think, to combine, like, kind of what, like, the hip youth are wearing with being, like, someone who's, say, you're, like, 32 to 37 or 38. That's your, and that you want to look cool. Like, you don't run around wearing the tight clothing and the brightly colored weird, you know, shit mm-hmm. that, like, a young person who doesn't know what the hell he's doing with his life would be seen wearing. Because then you're going to be kind of associated with that. Like, that dude never grew up or whatever.
Right. You don't want to be, like, the guy who's 37 who's like, wait,
like, there's a way
like
to look cool as an adult and not feel like, oh, I'm like a grown-up kind of square. It's like you can wear well-fitting jeans that aren't either too tight or too baggy or crazy, that have a nice like cut to them, that aren't too slim but aren't too baggy, and then like a cool pair of boots or something that look hip but also say like that's an adult who has his shit together.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a cool kind of like button down that has like polka dots or whatever kind of like pattern on it.
Now, what are your thoughts about a guy in his early 30s that loves to wear purple pants? That's like kind of lame, right? Like, that's like really awful.
Do you own purple pants?
Someone at this table might own.
I did.
Own
hey,
purple
I lost
pants.
Them. They were maroon.
You lost your purple
if
pants?
If you remember well, they were maroon.
Maroon's not bad.
I feel like Samson just got his hair cut off. You lost your purple pants?
Yeah, dude.
That might have been the smartest reference I've ever made on this podcast, but okay.
Yeah. Who made the pants?
I want to say Banana Republic.
Okay. Yeah, maroon's not bad. Like, bright red might be a little much or whatever, unless you're like a hip-hop artist or like a lead guitarist in a rock band.
Yeah.
Like, those people are leather pants or whatever. Like, you got to have that kind of job. But like,
I've got a Reading Rainbow t-shirt, right? And I still like to rock it every now and then.
Yeah,
but
that's cool.
But I definitely...
he said that's so kind.
Yeah.
No, you do
really
that.
Yeah, okay, like cool, having a vintage kind of ironic-ish t-shirt.
Yeah.
Totally still have a few of those.
But you can't do that all the time.
Yeah.
Like, and it's a special occasion when I pull that out.
Like, I saw this dude at a concert once with a much younger girlfriend. He was in his like early 50s. Mm-hmm. And he was trying to pull off that like I'm still a young, cool concert goer. And he had jeans that were way too tight and a shirt that was way too tight, and he wasn't in shape and he was older, and he had like a glowingly brand new pair of Converse Chuck Taylors on. And you're like, dude, you purposely dress like this. You're fucking 50. But throw on a cool looking fitted J. Crew shirt and then like dark jeans and a sort of beat up pair of Vans or Converse, and then it's like, all right, that's just an adult on a night off and he's going out with his much younger girlfriend.
Yeah.
It won't look like you're trying so hard.
Yeah.
Like that's what makes me uncomfortable is like
super clean shoes is trying too hard, huh?
Yeah, with all that other stuff, because you knew he was like, what shoes are going to match these super tight jeans and this tight shirt?
He
dressed like it was the first day of school.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. You know,
the
first day of school when you're like, everything's got to be perfect. The backpack's got to be clean.
Yeah,
you know,
this
no
this outfit, everyone's going
to
know.
Yeah, all new clothes at once is really uncomfortable to look at. But like brand new jeans with a beat up shirt is cool, or brand new shoes with like worn in jeans and whatever. You got to
pace
mix
yourself.
It up a little bit.
You worked at the Comedy Store, right?
For, 2 years.
Yeah, I think I met you after that, right?
Probably. I worked there from late 2003 to mid 2005.
Okay. Before we wrap up, I want to hear the just your Comedy Store experience to this point. Getting past, hanging out there, working there.
So from the very beginning, I started doing the open mics when I was 18, 19, and then because I didn't know anything about life and had no life experience, I talked about being 18 or 19.
Which is what you have to do.
Because you don't know anything else.
Right.
And some, like, I would do, like, political humor because I read the paper a lot and I was involved. You know. And
have you always been that curious?
Less
about...
so now. Like, I still follow it, but I don't care to talk about it on stage.
30-year-old guys love seeing an 18-year-old kid going, you know what's wrong with this country?
Exactly. Here's the deal with globalization. what the hell do I know? Yeah. I read 4 Noam Chomsky books. Now I know everything. So I would do that kind of shit. And then the first few times I did it, Ari Shaffir at the time was an employee there, and he came up to me and he's like, hey man, are you really like 18 years old? And with a big smile on his face, I'm like, yeah, I am. He's like, cool, this club's 21 and over, so you're gonna have to go outside. And I was like, oh fuck.
Oh, God.
And then that's how we became friends. That, he would
such
like
an Ari move too.
Yeah, he would make me stay outside, and if I would stood in the hallway, the stairway to the OR, he'd be like, see where your foot is on the threshold there? You can't have that there, because that's for over 21 year olds and you are under 21. So we'd have that kind of relationship for a while. So I would have
but at least that like made you comfortable being there, right? Somebody that was at least
a
like
little bit,
acknowledging.
Yeah, yeah. He would acknowledge me and kind of. That's how you, if you really don't like someone, you don't mess
you
with them at all.
Ignore them. Yeah,
yeah. But if you are fucking with someone and you know regularly, you're like, yeah, you're kind of giving me the hazing thing.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. So that's
and when
how,
you first start hanging around the store, like, and you don't know anybody, that's why the people that don't go around much, they're not comfortable. Like,
yeah.
When I first started going, I was just so, it kept me away because like, I don't know anybody. And like,
yeah.
The few people I do know, I have to hope that they're there.
Right.
And then when I finally like met Bobby, it gave me somebody of a value that was in there that I was like, oh, cool. Somebody that like that I can at least go. And if he's there, I can like chat with him for a minute and feel like, okay, I'm not completely out of my element here.
Yeah.
So Ari was that for you. And then.
Yeah, he was kind of like that. And then I would do the open mic pretty much every week. But I never made it a point to do it every week because back then it was awful. And I literally just had to sit out front. I couldn't talk with anyone. So I was like, I'll just do other open mics and, you know, this one sometimes. And then by the time I turned 21, everyone that I kind of was friends with was working there. So I was like, you got to get me a job here after I turn 21, or I'm probably going to move to New York because the open mic scene here is fucking terrible and I need to like progress.
Plus, and you were getting banned from all of them.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they got me a job. So I turned 21 on May 3rd. I was hired there by August. And then I started working. I worked the phones Monday through Friday, and I worked the parking lot Thursday and Friday night, and I worked the cover booth one or two nights a week.
I have so much respect for the parking lot. I only did phones, so it was like, you know, just dealing with avails and saying all that bullshit and dealing with Tommy.
Yeah.
But the parking lot seems like just the most stressful thing of all time.
It had its nights. The Thursday, Friday, surprisingly, and I say this back then, there is a back then and a now comedy store because they're two different places.
You really saw both worlds.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah. And it was practically closed for business, you know, back then. It was just so terrible. So those nights were really easy on the lot. You know, I could be like, by midnight, I'm cracking a beer and drinking while still, because there's no cars to move, you know?
Right.
And there were no rules then, so you could smoke indoors and drink whenever you wanted. It was just like, it was fucking crazy.
And for people who don't know, the Comedy Store lot is very, it's not big for.
Yeah, it can fit comfortably, probably 12 cars or something, but they force 15 or 16 into it.
Absolutely.
And it's
difficult. And then one guy has to
figure it all
out. If somebody
out.
Came at 9 and it's now 12:30 and they want to leave and it's packed with cars, that one person has to somehow back out every car.
Yeah.
Right.
It's crazy.
Just kind of play this really advanced Tetris game.
Yeah. It pretty much
exactly
was.
What it was.
I got, car Tetris.
I got so good at it. It helped my parking skills all over Los Angeles. I was like, I can fit in that spot.
Yeah.
And people were like, how the fuck did you do that? Comedy Store lot. That's how.
Yeah. And then did you ever have moments parking cars where some comic would like try to park there because he thought he could and then you would have to tell him like, hey, buddy.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, oh, let me do it because if you hit a car, I'm going to get blamed and I have no money to pay anyone for a dinged fucking fender.
Who was like the most, the biggest like name that you got to meet through that as an employee? That when you were first like, holy shit, I just parked fucking Chris Rock's car.
Chris Rock always parks on the street. Because he just doesn't want to get his like car dinged up, or he doesn't want to get trapped in the lot, which I totally understand. Probably the Wayans brothers, I would see them a lot. Tommy Davidson would always come in like the biggest truck you've ever seen, and I'm like, you really want to park this here, dude? You have money, you got the money to buy this truck, go park in the Hyatt. I get so mad. And then this was like before Russell Peters was coming around and all that.
So you're doing that, so then the lot
Dice
then
would come in a lot. Joe Rogan was there a lot. You'd see them and they're like awesome cars and stuff. But I would always be like, hey, man, you just park it here and take your keys because I don't want to be responsible for fucking up a Porsche or like a really nice Hummer or whatever, like whatever any of these guys had. So I was like, I tried to be as smart as I could about it because I'm like, I just don't want to be responsible for damaging a car. So I did those jobs for a while. And then I showcased for Mitzi like a couple of times. I try to be careful about that. But I developed like a relationship with her, talking to her on the phone a lot in the mornings
and
shit.
About what?
just like whatever, either whatever she wanted to talk about, like how are things at the club or how's your comedy going, or
and she was still pretty sharp. I mean,
she was like fairly sharp. She had her days where she just thought, you know, was complaining about something, and I'm just like, I don't know if this is true or this happened. I was just like, let me patch you through to Duncan or whoever the talent coordinator at the time was. But she was always like nice to me, and like she, I showcased for her a couple of times, and then I did two in like 2 or 3 weeks. I did one and she made me like a non-paid regular, which was like you could leave avails to do the belly room shows and you could do pop-ins, I think it was, or something. So she passed me to do that, and I thought that was this huge like achievement. I'm like, yeah, I'm on my way to becoming a paid regular. So then 2 weeks later, she comes in to showcase again, and I was like, they didn't have enough people to go up, and then they're like, just go up. I'm like, but I just got paid made a non-paid regular.
And 2 weeks later,
I don't
want to
bomb
stuff.
And have her take that away. Yeah. And then I was like, you know what? Screw it. This crowd seems pretty good. And I remember Ahmed and Pauly were sitting like on either side of her. Mm-hmm. And Tommy was running around doing whatever, finding people to go on or something. And I was like, screw it. I'm going to do it. I'm going up. So I go up, and then my set went pretty good. And I got off stage, and then Tommy took Mitzi, and then they were still sitting there, Pauly and Ahmed, and they were both, at individual times, they're like, dude, congratulations. I was like, what? Because my mom just said, you're a paid regular now. I'm like, and I couldn't tell if he was kidding. Yeah. He's like, come on, bro. Yeah, right. And I was like, are you fucking with me?
Yeah,
and
it's like no. And then then afterward, the guy from the video game magazine's going to be here.
Past you,
and
bro.
And he's going to write an article on you.
Yeah. We're going to paint top skater on the wall when you get past officially.
Top regular, bro. So I was like, dude, what? And I didn't believe him. And then Ahmed was like, dude, Mitzi's said to make him a regular. We were both sitting there, and I was like, he's like, let's go celebrate and have a drink like next door at the Hyatt. And I'm like, dude, I'm not gonna believe it until I hear it from the source, or if Tommy comes back after he drops her off at home. And we go to the Hyatt, and I was so paranoid about like being so superstitious or whatever. I was like, dude, I'm not gonna have a drink until I know for sure. I'll have water. Yeah, so I'm not celebrating until I know. I might jinx it like an idiot.
Right.
So I have water, and I'm sitting there, and we'll go back to the store. Tommy will come back. He pulls back into the lot around like midnight, 12:30, and I go, dude, what happened? Because Ahmed and Pauly are telling me this, and he goes, yeah, you're a paid regular. And I remember I was leaning up against a car, and I just like fell back onto the hood of a car, and I just went and put my arms out, and I went, yes!
Oh, yeah, dude.
It was the greatest feeling, man.
I love people those. Think about all, for the other clubs, it's just kind of like, it's the only club, I don't know what the ones like in New York are, but like, the amount where you can put in that amount of work, like you did the open mics, through working there, through just I don't know if any clubs have as much where it means that much, you know.
Yeah, and there's that moment. It just seems like every other club, it's like you slowly get booked and slowly get booked, and like there's never that actual ceremonial moment of you were this a couple seconds ago, now you are this.
Because it's like the perfect storm. When it comes to like a comedy club, like it's very old, so it has a lot of history, and it's in LA, so the biggest comics ever have been passed there and have worked there, and it's so big that it has like the opportunity for like door guys to be hired who are comedians, and the fact that they allowed that, they kind of turned it into like this like comedy college of sorts. Yeah. So there becomes more of a desire to want to get in because you're like, I can work my way into this system. And they have not passed a lot of people, if you think about it, from like the amount of they've been open 42 years. And like the amount of people is kind of small given how long the club's been there.
And considering the amount of people in Los Angeles that have tried
that
to be comedians, it's definitely an honor. And I totally see that.
So it was like that was my place. That was when I, even right before I started, I remember driving by it once because I'd seen it talked about on E! When they were doing the True Hollywood Stories. And I was like, that's, for some reason, that's the club that I want. Like the Laugh Factory, I don't care, the Improv, whatever. I was like, I got to be a part of that club.
You say it's so different now versus then. I mean, obviously because attendance is one, but I mean, was it a darker?
The vibe was much darker. They were not bringing in a lot of new regulars. So you had all these like guys that were like kind of left over from the comedy boom in the 80s and 90s that would only perform there. Mm-hmm. And they were very territorial about like newer people coming in, and they were just mean to everybody. It just fostered this environment of like, you were a kind of a dick and you had to be mean to survive and like get by, because everyone was just like, they thought everyone, any new young fresh face was there to take their 9:45 main room spot or their 10:30 OR spot on a Wednesday or whatever.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you're just like, I just want to get good at comedy, man. Yeah, right. This is like the place to do it. Like, don't be an asshole. So you had to kind of fight to survive, and like, you know, you could get fired at any moment. Mitzi would just fire people if mm-hmm. she didn't like the way they sounded on the phone or the way they looked sitting at the back door. So you're always paranoid. You're always worried. Fuck. And everyone was kind of coming at you, and you're, it taught me to like fight for myself and like be tough, you know, because you were, everyone was an asshole and you had to learn to defend yourself and stand your fucking ground. And there was a hazing process, and you know, it was like Fight Club. Like, you it really was like, however, whatever they
first
used,
rule of Comedy Store, you do not talk about the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And however they worded it, when you started Fight Club, you were like a sponge or whatever they said. And then by the time 6 weeks later, you're carved out of wood. Or however many, you know. Yeah. It was kind of like that, but for comedy.
And then when did, because one thing that is great that I think is what introduced us is Bobby, right?
Yeah.
Or just a great common bond to talk about. I feel like the first real conversation we had was at some barbecue and we were sharing Bobby stories.
Right.
And it was such a great, I felt very... I was so glad that, because you were, excuse me, his main guy, and so then I started getting some dates, and I was like, God, I hope, like, this doesn't, like, Nick seems so cool, I hope I can be friends with him, but, like, I didn't know if, like, you were going to be like, hey, man, what the fuck, like, I'm his guy, you know?
About going
opening
to the
for Bobby, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I could see, why someone would think that, but I was always so grateful that he's one of the few comics that, like, is in a position to take people on the road with him, and does it. You know, and like takes care of you.
And does it make you get your flight and shit to where it's like you're coming out, you're not just...
He tells the clubs, like, I'm, you know, I want to bring an opener and stuff. Right. And he's in the position where he can do it. And it's awesome. So like I've always been one of those people, like he showed me like the road and like here's what performing in different cities is like in front of big rooms.
So huge, by the way.
It's,
and to get that, we got so lucky because that experience to get that with somebody at that level too is... incredible. Like,
oh, yeah.
To immediately be doing all these sold out shows and seeing somebody who's been, he's going to these clubs all for like third and fourth, fifth, whatever times. Right. And just, man, observing all that shit and the way a headliner just, you know, just acts
carry
and behaves.
It was just the kind of business that they have to do.
Totally. You learn, it accelerates the growth process in comedy, because if you're just in the one city, you're doing shorter sets in front of one type of crowd. Like, you learn how to perform for every crowd. How to do longer sets and be interesting for 30 minutes or 35 or 25 or whatever versus 7 or 10. It's a whole nother ball game.
Yeah.
But I was always so happy that he was able to do that. And then, you know, Marin had done it for me when I was younger, and Steve Byrne and guys like that, and Ahmed would take me on the road with him. So the learning experience I got from that kind of thing, I was always like, I was never like, no, that's mine. It's like, if you can do it, by all means, you know. And he likes to do that. He likes to take younger guys out and show them, like, this is what you're going to work towards. So here's how you do it. Here's the beginning stages.
Any
and
really
shit.
Crazy Bobby story? Like, he bought at a gas station some, I think it was Extends. Mm-hmm. And he goes, we're going to take this tonight. He would always threaten me with dates. Like, he would say, like, either, you know, one time he made me eat oysters, which I hate. The texture, whatever the taste, it was, like, the worst thing ever. And he made me eat, like, five of them, or he was going to take... He's like, you want to go to San Jose?
Right.
Eat these oysters. And I was like, God damn it, man. Bot Extends, and it was like, we're taking these. I was like, I'm not hanging out with you after I take this.
Yeah, we're not going to take boner pills and just, like, stare at each other.
And be having coffee or something. Yeah, so anyway, how's your heart on? It's pretty good. It's getting there.
And then we were in Fort Lauderdale, and he was gambling at the Hard Rock, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it was with some girl, and my phone wasn't on, and he needed to he needed me to collect the money for him for some reason, because his ticket, what the fuck happened? He won a bunch on something, but it was on somebody else's game, maybe. He needed me to come down and claim his money for whatever reason, and I didn't. My phone wasn't on, and then I came down later, met up with him, and he just laid into me for not, like, being around. And I was like, well, I'm not fucking gambling. And then he would stay up all night.
Yeah.
And then we had shows the next day, and then came in with a Red Bull and was like, I woke up 20 minutes ago. Yeah. He's like, you got to do more time. I don't want to do this show.
That's fine.
And then he would go on and just murder.
Oh, yeah.
Like he always does.
And then get up and go, they hated me.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
You destroyed that
room.
You
got a standing ovation.
Yeah.
Come on, guy.
But was there any, I mean, just really.
I forced him to go to Disney World once. Because look, here's the deal: when
I go,
you force
someone to go to Disney World. Don't you want to go to Disney World?
Not him.
Not Bobby Lee.
His Disney World is sleeping until 5:30 p.m.
Yeah.
That's his magic kingdom.
Yeah.
Is the wow. his bed? Yeah. So when I go on the road, I go for it. Like I'm seeing and experiencing the city. Remember when I went to Seattle?
Yeah.
I was like, hit me with places
to
go.
Yeah. And you really did it up, man.
I do everything. Like I want it. I never traveled when I was a kid. We never went anywhere. So I'm like, I need to see.
What a perk of this job, right?
Oh, yeah.
Holy
totally,
shit.
Dude. I make the most out of even what seems like is going to be the most boring city.
Sure.
So we went to Orlando. I'm like, we are going to Disney World. I don't care what you say. He's like, no, we're not. I'm like, we're going. So
I'm not going by myself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm like, we are going. Yeah. And he's like, all right. So I get him up. We go. And then he ends up like, this is actually pretty cool. We like bought shirts. I still have this shirt I wear that's Mickey made out of planets. That every time I wear it, someone's like, that's the coolest shirt. Where'd you get that? I'm like, it's because I went to fucking Disney World, motherfucker. So we went to like...
I love that sentence.
We went to... Yeah.
I went to Disney World, bitch.
So we went to Epcot Center, and we learned a lot about that. Well, all the restaurants the servers are all... If you go to the French place, everyone speaks French. A lot of people, they have exchange students that come to America.
Now, real French or like Disney French?
No, real French.
Okay. Yeah. Not like Beauty and the Beast, like Gaston. Like,
yeah, not like that. Yeah.
Or the candle. No, the
candle.
Yeah, it's none of that. It's like real French.
It's pretty good, Brad.
No one fights like Gaston. No one smokes like Gaston.
Can you
no
please,
one fucks like Gaston. That's the lyrics,
please
right?
Please rent a black box theater and do a one-man show of
please.
Beauty and the Beast.
Done.
Yeah, I'm pre-ordering tickets
Kickstarter.
Right now.
I'll be Clocksworth. You have no idea.
Nice.
It's great.
So he loved it.
Yeah, we ended up having fun, and then we went to an arcade to kind of weirdly,
shit.
So
and then
I was like,
a tough skater game.
Oh, dude, I always look, and there never is. Oh, you know what? There was one to sidetrack again. We've done this so many times, sidetracking. But I was playing Harris at Harvey's in Lake Tahoe.
Yeah.
And I don't gamble, and I found an arcade in the casino. I was like, this is my life for the next 5 days.
It's a week gig.
It's a 1 week gig, pretty
one-week
much.
Gig, yeah.
I saw a Top Skater in the corner, and I went over to it, and it was off because it was down for repairs. So I didn't just leave it at that. I went to the front desk. I'm like, who runs the arcade and the thing? You'd have to go talk to the...
Like, why? You need to find for your son or your younger brother? No, me.
I don't know if you're aware, but a certain game, Top Skater is down.
Yeah.
This is unacceptable.
I was like, I don't have a son, but my inner child needs some fulfillment. So you're going to have to talk to one of the employees when the little stand opens where the other games are. And all right, so I went over there. I'm like, hey, who do I talk to about getting a game fixed? So like, well, what's wrong? I'm like, that Top Skater machine in the corner. I'm here for 5 days, and I don't gamble, and I would love to give all my money to that. And they were like, yeah, well, one of our maintenance guys has tried to fix it a couple times, and they can't figure it out, so it's just down for a while. And I was like, fuck. But I went the extra mile to get that game
up
and
running.
You're
like, hold on. Let me look at some YouTube videos. Give me a screwdriver.
Yeah, I'm like, let me borrow a toolbox, and I learned how to solder. So we went to the arcade there, and we saw air hockey, and he's like, oh, let's play this. I'll beat you. I'm like, you'll do what? He's like, and then we got competitive to the point where arcade security had to come over and make sure we weren't fighting. We were screaming, fuck you!
Yeah.
I should have gotten that, put you, use your hand, or whatever. Is everything okay over here? We're being competitive.
That puck was over the line. It was on my side. You had no right to dive across. I
mean, we're yelling at each other. Because we're just getting so, the puck's going flying, like the harder you hit.
Yeah,
so the security guard actually stayed for like a minute or two to watch us to make sure we weren't... Because all he did was hear.
Sure.
And he's just like, are they for real?
Yeah.
And so we stayed and watched for a couple... And then he just shook his head and walked away. Because we're two grown men yelling at each other about
air
hockey.
In Disney space shirts.
Yeah.
Well, we started off with video games, and I think we just ended with video games.
I never finished that story about getting kicked out of PE, but we'll do it next time.
Oh, shit.
No.
Part two?
I mean,
well, I don't know. I'm not inviting myself on again. I'm just
I feel like we have to hear it.
Yeah. What happened?
I got kicked out of the PE class for throwing the racket.
Good night, everybody.
Awesome if you just ended it. And people are like, what the fuck? Your call. You can end it right now, and I can not tell the end of the story.
I mean, I don't know if I want.
So.
listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.